Big show on Thursday, September 5th. We heard from John Rodriguez. John is the party-endorsed Republican candidate for mayor of Bridgeport. Joe McGee stopped by from the Business Council of Fairfield County to talk taxes, tolls, and more. And we also chatted with an expert about how many people, millions, will place bets legally and or otherwise on pro football this year.
Listening to Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
And thanks for stopping by. We really appreciate it. We know you're busy during the day. We know you have choices, and we thank you for picking us here at WICC 600 on the radio and online at WICC600.com. Just a reminder, Yankee baseball tonight, 5:55 pregame, 6:30 opening pitch as the Yanks play on here on WICC. Not baseball, though. We're talking about local politics. And joining us right now live in the studio, John Rodriguez, the party-endorsed Republican candidate for mayor of Bridgeport. John, great to have you. How are you?
Excellent. And thank you, Paul, for having me. And well, to your audience, good afternoon.
Yeah, thanks, John. Appreciate it. And party-endorsed Republican candidate in Bridgeport. Now, you and I were even joking off, you know, off the air here. But Bridgeport does have, as I've learned here over the past, well, I worked here, you know, 10 years ago for a few years, and I learned it then, and I kind of had it reinforced to me now, there is an active Republican Party here in the city of Bridgeport.
Yes, yes. Growing, small amount of growing. We're under 5,000, so it's, but it's better than 4,000.
Yeah.
So we're slowly getting there, and hopefully this election term we will have even more Republicans and more people vote for the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are actually have their eyes open now and see exactly what's going on in the city. Decades and decades and decades of the same thing. It's a machine. The Democratic Party is a machine. And people are saying, you know what? They keep promising us A, B, and C, and they deliver crumbs. While a small segment of the Democratic Party mm-hmm. received the bulk of the monies and benefits. And at this time, I think it's a perfect storm. Perfect storm for Gannon to go mm-hmm. and for the party also to be gone. People are tired. Our reputation precedes us. Word association, Bridgeport, Gannon. Corrupt. Mm-hmm. People are tired of it.
Yeah.
You know, too much is going on. Too much is going on. Mm-hmm. And just people want to be respected. We give you a vote year after year. And what happens? You take our vote and do what you want instead of doing what the people want. And people just want a fair shake.
There, John, as you well know, because you've made a political run before, as you well know, when it comes to the big cities in Connecticut, Bridgeport, Hartford, New Haven, even Waterbury to an extent, and other cities, the Republican Party in these big blue cities is an afterthought. It's like, yeah, they're there, but they don't understand us. Why would an African-American man, Hispanic African-American man like you, why would you join the Republican Party and not be in the Democratic Party?
Well, I can't endorse, I have to say that I'm a Christian man first and foremost.
Okay.
I can't endorse a party that separates families. And I'm not saying families at the board. I'm forget that at this point in time. You know, I'm a strong family man. My wife and I, we have five kids, and all college educated, all contributing. And we see the value of a family. We see the value of education. We see the value of when you go down, you know, your family comes around you and picks you up. I can't be with the Democratic Party. I'm trying to get away from the R and the D at this point in time in Bridgeport. And I'm saying, if you are a Democrat, you've been here for, let's say, what, 40 years? Let's take a look at your city. Be it whether it's Hartford, be it whether it's New Haven, and Bridgeport, of course. Take a look at your city. Are you happy with it? Mm-hmm. I'm with a school, a small charter school, under 300 kids, and a budget of about $4 million. I'm the board president, and we have excellent, excellent results.
As a lot of charter schools, John, do in the big cities here in the state. They do great work.
Correct. They're manageable. They're not large. A large school, you take the largest schools in the city here, the graduation rate has increased to about 75%, and it was within the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. And it was about 66%. But those that are graduating, you have to ask, are they pushing them through? And a certain segment of those kids are pushed through, so they graduate, but they're not prepared for the mm-hmm. real world. Mm-hmm. And the charter schools, I have to say, especially our school, these kids are prepared. I would say within the last 3 years, I would say around 290 of our kids, I beg pardon, out of 290, I would say around 260 have graduated and gone on to college. Mm-hmm. And I've signed every single diploma. And those kids are prepared. And when they come in, and our school is 7th to 12th. When they come in into the 7th grade, we naturally give them the test.
Yeah.
And they come in with 3rd and 4th grade reading levels, mathematics, comprehension. And it's like, what is the problem here? We need to be more efficient with our programs. Mm-hmm. And with a small school, you can work with them. We have special ed teachers, paraprofessionals that work with these kids. And by the time they get to 12th grade and finish the 12th grade, they are prepared to be assets. And that's my thing. My five kids are they're assets. They're college grads. My son just came out of the Marines, and he's now going back for his engineering degree, second degree, and he should be finished within a year.
Wow.
And I see how my kids are contributing.
So as mayor, you're part of your core platform then, John, I'm sensing an emphasis on the family here.
Family education. Education is the key. Family. Of course, it has to be family.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm working with the local pastors. Yesterday, I was with the. I was invited to a forum where Mayor Gannon and State Senator Marilyn Moore also attended.
Okay.
It was a forum for the Latin pastors.
Yeah.
At this point in time, I'm sorry, I forgot the name of the organization.
Okay. Yeah.
But it was excellent. And the pastors are concerned because naturally the pastors are concerned about families. And me being a family man, mm-hmm. Highly family. I'm a protector. And like most men, I'm with the families.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one reason why I'm running for the slot of mayor in the city of Bridgeport.
What before we go to break here, what one or two areas, John, would make you a better choice than either the incumbent, Joe Ganim, or Marilyn Moore, his challenger? Why you not Mr. Ganim or Ms. Moore?
Well, for one, Mr. Gannon has started campaigning in 1988, and this is now 2019. If he gets another 4 years, it'll be almost 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
His vision, his dream for the city has come and gone. And we need to give someone else a chance to run the city with a new vision, and also to respect the voters, because apparently he hasn't respected the voters. Now, Marilyn Moore, excellent woman. I've spoken to her on quite a few occasions. As far as I'm concerned, she is also part of the problem. Now that she's running, she is now calling out mistakes that Mayor Ganning has done. But the Democratic Party in Bridgeport is horrible to the bulk of the people here, to the majority of the people that live in the city. We're talking about 148,000 people. They're horrible.
The Connecticut Post used the word today, John, cronyism. Do you agree with that?
I do.
I asked the mayor about that a couple of weeks ago when he was here, and he said, that's not correct. Would you use that word?
Yes, I would. Let's take a look at the people the people who work for the city. Many of them are making well over $100,000 and even over $200,000, but yet they don't live in the city. And one thing that I would do, I would highly recommend that people who work for the city live in the city. And this would be new people coming in. The contracts that we have currently, no problem. I have no problem with the contracts that we currently have, and I would uphold those. But I have to look at the new contracts coming in. Why not give them to the residents of Bridgeport? And at the same time, with a better educational system, let's educate the citizens of Bridgeport so that when these jobs do come up from the city, they'll be able to qualify for these jobs, mm-hmm. just like businesses. Why would a business want to come into Bridgeport with an uneducated workforce? So I say educate the kids, and it will alleviate many problems. Number one, they would have an educated workforce. So they would definitely come into the city because you have Stanford, you have Norwalk, mm-hmm. and then you have us.
Mm-hmm.
We're the next big city. Look at what's happening to Norwalk.
10 minutes away from Stanford. Exactly. 10 minutes up the turnpike.
Exactly. Yeah. And our residents don't have to travel half an hour to an hour away. Mm-hmm. They can stay here. We have qualified people here. And let's give them the job so that they stay here, so they can be homeowners, buy cars, go to restaurants. We have to make this a profit city as opposed to a nonprofit city.
Just a man, a microphone, and a lot of thoughts. Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli, WICC 600.
A few more minutes here on a Thursday as we head to the weekend. John Rodriguez is the guest. He's the party-endorsed Republican candidate for mayor of the city of Bridgeport. Both the Democrat and Republican primaries coming up this coming Tuesday, the 10th, if you are a member of either party. Don't forget to vote. And if you want to vote, register beforehand and get out and vote. John, we were talking before we went on the air here briefly about the, a problem that ebbs and flows around here, crime and violence in the big cities in Connecticut, including Bridgeport. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm very passionate about crime. My oldest son was killed when he was trying to attend the University of Illinois. He was there for the summer and killed. And I have other family members also, in total four. Mm-hmm. So for me, crime isn't just something that we talk about mm-hmm. when something happens. And the 12-year-old that was killed, and all due respect to his family, I won't mention his name, but I think everyone knows who he was. He was a member of my school. Mm. And that touched me.
That must have been awful.
It was. I was there at the funeral, and it was horrible. Correction, I was there at the memorial, okay. Pardon me. Mm-hmm. And the other, I must have called the police at least 8 or 9 times within the last 4 to 5 months pertaining to gunshots. And on one of those occasions, I ran upstairs, grabbed my wife, who was sleeping, put her on the floor, and I laid on top of her while I was dialing 911. And the next morning, there was a murder on the next block over. And these things affect me, and that's when I took seriously running for mayor, because I was asked about running, and I said, who wants to run for mayor? You're crazy. But after these instances, I started saying, John, come on. It could have been you. It could have been my wife. And I said, I'm going to attack this crime.
How do you do that?
Well, for one thing, being a family man, family is important. Family is extremely important. I work now with the Dumas Organization. And my function at this point in time is it's a reentry prison program.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And my function is to provide jobs when they get out. And I've been working with Mr. Brown on that topic. And when he calls, I do whatever I can. And so far, it's been successful. And I'm working with Russell Temple Church, Pastor McCullough again. And they have a prison ministry program, which I will be entering that program also. It's for the younger youth. And what we need to do is stabilize, like any situation, stabilize the situation. If a boat's sinking, stabilize the boat.
Stop the leak.
Yes.
Stop the leak first before you fix it.
Of course. Yeah. Strengthen the family. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm involved in the church, walking the streets. Within the next 2 weeks, I will be involved also walking the streets, talking to the young men, trying to give them the hope. Right now, they're killing each other. For what? They have no hope.
You said to me before we came on, and I think this bears repeating now that we're back on. You said again that your heritage, your ethnicity. What did you say, John? 40,000 Latinos in this city.
Yes, there are 40,000 Latinos.
You look at that as a strength that you could bring to the mayor's office. Yeah,
of course. And there's approximately African American, a little under 35,000. Okay. So you're talking 75,000.
Half a city. Yeah, over half a city. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I can relate to them. Yo soy un Latino. My parents came from Puerto Rico right off the boat. Mm. My father joined the Navy or was a contractor with the Navy from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and finally the Gulf War and died out in the Gulf War aboard ship in Egypt. Mm. So he gave. My mother gave in the projects, Enumor projects, the largest projects in the city at the time. And she was a giver. She was known as the mother. And all she did was take care of the kids. And I inherited that responsibility. And growing up, I see my five kids, I see them, and they're doing great. So we as a city have given up. If you say something about Bridgeport, all noses are turned down. And I say, well, I'm living here now and haven't worked or lived in Bed-Stuyvesant, in Harlem, in the South Bronx, and look how those cities have turned around.
Yeah.
I mean, now
I work with people in New York part time on the weekends, and they talk about how their rents and the condo fee and the condo prices in Harlem are going through the roof.
Yes, my wife had a condo, a brownstone years ago in Harlem.
Yeah,
you know, so we know what that's about. And now we go back to visit my 90-year-old Japanese mother-in-law, and you look at that and say,
it's changed.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
So now, why can't Bridgeport change? And I say the youth. Let's give them, as mayor, I would reach out to the youth and have vocational training for them, be it whether it's 6 months, a year, or even a two-year program. Have counselors to assist them. Because look how much we spend per inmate in jail, anywhere from $35,000 to $45,000. You know what? Let me give them a $10,000 program, and I'm just using that as an average figure.
Yeah.
I will invest in these people. Give them an opportunity to live a dream of being just, I'm going to work 5 days a week.
Yeah.
And I can support my wife, go to a restaurant, maybe buy a good secondhand car, and even buy a home, where Bridgeport is still the place to buy a home. But we need to rise the quality of life. And under the present Democratic administration, they haven't. Why should we continue to give them our votes? We give them our dreams, our hope, our kids, and what are they doing with it? Year, decade after decade, they continue to just fight amongst themselves. And again, a small segment of the Democratic Party abused the rest of Democratic Party. And there are some good members, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. Some beautiful, hardworking Democratic members, but they can't do a thing because the machine is so strong. And if you don't kiss the ring, forget about it. Nothing will get done. It's either my way or the highway, and it's horrible. Now, on the Republican end, I'm endorsed by the former mayor, Mayor Moran. Mm-hmm. I have four other candidates who ran for this position who are endorsing me. And as a matter of fact, my opponent, Ethan Book, his treasurer, Mary Gates, is now supporting me. She left his campaign because there were some irregularities that were going on, and now she supports me. I can do so much in the Republican Party because there's no machine here. I will call J.R. Morano, and he'll come down and help me, and the former candidate for governor, he will come down and help also. We now basically have a clear path to do what we want to do, and let's try to bring businesses in so that the mill rate will go down, so that we will have more of a tax base to do things, to support the changes that needs to be done in the Board of Education, to reduce the crime, put speed bumps in, put speed cameras around schools, and certain hot spots. Within the city. Also, mobile police stations. If we have hotspots, we should have police or community police officers who know the community, who know the people, and mobile police stations. If your crime's committed, you're
better response time. Absolutely,
exactly.
John. Unfortunately, we are out of time, folks. The primary is this Tuesday. If you are a Republican registered, vote in the Republican primary. If you're a registered Democrat, vote in the Democratic primary. John Rodriguez is the party endorsed Republican running in the primary on Tuesday. John, good luck. And if you are back, we will have you in at least once before the general election. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Listening to Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
Yeah, hi, how are you? 2 hours down, two to go, and we are here for you at 203-333-9422, 203-333-WICC. WICC 600 on the air, WICC600.com online. Interesting story. A bunch of stories have popped up over the past 2 or 3 weeks that after the summer recess, there's going to be, I guess, what's being referred to as a transportation reboot, right? Whatever that means. Control-Alt-Delete. A transportation reboot from the governor's office, Governor Ned Lamont, and mainly legislative Democrats, as to how to get a major transportation plan passed and whether or not that's going to include tolls, major infrastructure. A lot of folks in Fairfield County interested, including businesses. And joining us, the vice president of the Business Council of Fairfield County, Joe McGee, to talk about that. Joe, Paul here. How are you, my friend?
Hey, hi, Paul. How you doing?
I'm good. Been a long time. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah,
you were quoted, Joe, here in a story, a long piece that was in the Connecticut Mirror, a good piece that was put together by the Mirror staff a couple of days ago regarding what's going to happen here with infrastructure and tolls. And you had an interesting quote here. You said, quote, the whole debate was about how to pay for something rather than how to improve your life. If we invest that money in the highways, how does that improve commuting time? And I said, well, let me give Joe a call and let him expound a little on this, Joe, and it looks like we're in for fun and games again this fall.
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, the issue of transportation is one of the critical issues affecting the economy of Connecticut, but also particularly Fairfield County. I mean, our members, this issue, transportation infrastructure, commuting to work, congestion, and then the issue of getting talent in their companies is the two big issues.
Mm-hmm.
So my point was, when the proposal for tolls first came out, it was just about how to pay for something. It didn't explain properly, okay, if we're going to expend all this money, how does it improve my commuting life? How does it improve transportation? And I think, you know, going back to your earlier statement, introducing the segment, with the reboot, I think, has got to be about, listen, explain to people why we need more money for transportation, and then how it will improve the economy and how it will improve their commuting life or just their travel through Connecticut. I think that's critical. Because if it's just about how to pay for something, well, what am I paying for? What do I get out of all this money?
Yeah, and Joe, and I've you probably heard this, and I've said this ad nauseum on this show and other shows I've done. That request for money is with all due respect to the fine folks, Joe, that you and I know in the General Assembly, it's coming from a body of men and women, our state legislators, who, again, with all due respect, don't have a whole lot of credibility sometimes when it comes to doing what they say they're going to do with taxpayer money.
No, that's the trust issue, and the lockbox that was put on the ballot last election was indicative of that. If you're going to raise this money for transportation, you've got to spend it for transportation. And the polling showed that while most people were opposed to tolls, if there was a lockbox and they could be assured that the money raised went to improve transportation, you had a slim majority in favor of it. And that's the critical question. And I think the trust issue is a very big part of this. But I just want to say, Paul, look, we have got to do something with our highways.
Mm-hmm.
We have the slowest economic growth in the country. And the transportation crisis is part of that. When it takes me an hour to go by car in the evening from Stamford home to Fairfield, that's 18 miles, this is not acceptable. And this has really suppressed economic growth. It's very hard for companies to say, I'm going to move in a lot of people into Connecticut when they're going to face these kind of commutes.
Yeah, you know, it's...
And, you know, that was a theory 30 years ago. And people say, oh, yeah, we need to improve our transportation. But we continue to grow. But now we're up against it.
Well, you know, Joe,
work.
And you know, my engineer who you spoke to, Aaron Johnson, before he patched you through to me, we have a running joke. Not really a joke, but, you know, I come on here at 2 o'clock. I do a four-hour show, but, you know, we do traffic every 10 minutes on the sixes. Invariably, Joe, the first traffic we do on this program at 2:06, our reporter says, well, we're already into it. It's 45 minutes to an hour from the state line to Bridgeport. And it's and Aaron and I look at each other and go, it's 2 o'clock. Clock and it's already jammed.
But see, that's right. And that's what happened. This was a theory 25 years ago when they started doing these studies projecting what would happen in 2020. Now it's real. All those studies that were done predicting we'd have this kind of a crisis in 20 years have turned out to be true. And it's very difficult to grow your economy when you're facing that kind of traffic. I mean, you're taking out of people's day an hour to 2 hours. And a lot of people say, listen, I work my ass off. I don't want to be sitting in traffic for 2 hours a day.
Yeah.
And so that is a real problem. How we pay for this, and this shouldn't be a Democratic-Republican issue. This is a practical issue. How do we fix our transportation infrastructure? And it's going to cost us money. And it's just a simple fact. It's going to cost money. I'll give you an example.
Sure.
You know, on the railroad, there's four bridges.
Okay, yeah.
You know, the Coscom, mm-hmm. you know, right, and then the Saga Bridge, the one in Westport, mm-hmm. right, the one that always gets stuck.
Yes.
Those four bridges are 100 years old.
100, you know, Joe, thank you, because I ride Metro North 2 or 3 days a week into and out of New York, and we laugh, well, we don't laugh, but when you hear the bridges are stuck, it's like, wait a minute, we went to the moon in 1969. Why are we using a bridge that's 100 years old?
Exactly. And then, you know, we had a project here called 30-30-30, and we hired outside consultants on our own nickel, private dollars, to look at the New Haven line. Could we improve it? Could we get from Stamford to New York in 30 minutes, or from Bridgeport to Stamford in 30 minutes, or from Hartford to Bridgeport in 30 minutes? That's 30-minute increments.
Mm-hmm.
The traffic, the train travel has gotten longer in the last 20 years, the time, rather than shorter. So our outside consultant said, listen, you can really improve train service. This is ridiculous to think in this day and age these trains go 45 to 50 miles an hour. And when they go over those bridges, they have to go over them at 8 miles an hour.
I know.
I mean, this is really, it's not acceptable.
It's not. And, you know, back to your car theory, Joe, or what we're seeing in these long delays. We're trying to retain or interest young workers, millennials, out of college, maybe 1 or 2 years, to get good jobs here and stay in Connecticut. Joe, you know as well as I do, and I've read the stories, the New York Times did some really good stories on this, that you're dealing with a generation of workers that we want to retain here and keep here that is not into the car life or the car
right.
generation as you and I were. You know, we got our licenses at 16. It was great. We would sit in traffic no matter what it was. But now you've got a lot of these generational millennials who many of them don't even want to own a car.
No, I can tell you that. I have that in my own family. I couldn't wait to get my license when I turned 16.
Oh, you kidding? Me too.
My eldest daughter went to work in the city and didn't have a license.
Right?
I just couldn't believe it. And we see this in Stamford. If you look at all the housing development in Stamford around the train station,
mm-hmm.
many of those young people don't have cars. They use Uber, they use the train, and that's kind of, you know, the new thing that's developing in cities. And it's really exciting, but it requires you have good train service.
Yeah.
And see, look, we can solve this problem. But you have to be honest with people. It's not cheap. I mean, the state of Connecticut has just not invested. Look, we're not even up to a state of good repair on the rail line or the highway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to cost us another $800 million a year. And the question is, you've got to have a revenue source to support that. We can fix this. We can grow the economy, but we have to make a tough choice. And the political community has butchered this so far. They're just fighting.
Yeah.
Rather than the common sense approach would be, lay out to the public, here's the problem, here's how we propose to fix it, and it is going to cost us something. And
yeah.
We can do it.
And make it tangible.
Yeah, make it real so that people understand, look, if I'm going to have to pay, you know, an extra $100 or an extra $200 a year, whatever it's going to be, here's going to be the benefit.
Exactly. And maybe the state.
Hold them accountable.
Well, that's the whole thing.
Make it work.
Talking tolls, transportation, Greater Bridgeport area, Fairfield County, Stamford, Norwalk with Joe McGee, Vice President of the Business Council of Fairfield County. You know, Joe, I had a crazy idea, but why the hell not? You know, you and I both realize that this is a question of accountability and of credibility, which, as you say, the political class up in Hartford is just butchering nowadays. Joe, I have always thought that if you're going to put a limited amount of toll gantries up there, or let's just say for argument's sake they go with this bridge idea, okay? You know, it's the year 2019. If I really want to make people latch on to this, Joe, here's what I say. Say, okay, look, we know you're not a big fan of this, all right? But we're going to be as transparent and as open as we can on this. So here's what we're going to do. We've set up a website, yourtollmoney.com or .org, and you can see in real time, because don't tell me we couldn't do this, Joe. You can see in real time how much money these easy passes are putting into the state coffers. And then you can see where we intend, maybe we update it on a weekly or twice monthly basis, where we intend, okay, this toll plaza collected $8 million last month. It's going toward resurfacing this stretch of road. You see where I'm driving at, Joe? I think
I think that's a great idea.
Oh, absolutely.
You're tapping into the whole idea of transparency in government. So here's the dollars you raised. I think it's a hell of a good idea. Here's the dollars that are raised. I don't know if they're going to do the bridge thing, but let's say they do the bridge.
Okay, yeah.
All right, here's the money coming in, and here are the projects that the money's being spent on, and here's the schedule of improvement.
You're paying for these projects, and this is what you're paying for.
That's a great idea.
Well, see, you know all these movers and shakers up there, Joe. Tell them I said it. There you go, right?
No, I'll give you full credit for that idea. But that's a whole new movement in government to begin with, about mm-hmm. more transparency, knowing where our tax dollars go.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes to the earlier question you asked me about trust. The problem with a lot of this transportation fund is over the years when they would run into a budget deficit, they took money out of the special transportation fund. And so there's a legitimate complaint. You know, listen, if you hadn't taken that money out, we wouldn't be in this mess. Now, that's probably true, but the fact of the matter is that doesn't solve the problem going forward. We've got to solve this going forward. And yes, we're going to have to raise some money to fix this problem, and it will improve the economy and our life.
You know, Joe, you talk to, obviously, the business owners, all the big companies down there, the Fairfield County companies. If this doesn't change, Joe, in another 3, 5, maybe 10 years down the line, what is the effect going to be on the state?
Look, we're seeing it now, and people don't want to realize this. Stamford, right, which is the growth center of the state, has a 30% vacancy rate in its commercial office occupancy.
That was unheard of years ago.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now we're building a lot of housing, and that's successful, but we're not filling up our office space. And it's tied to this problem. The other issue we see is residential real estate values are not growing. In fact, in Connecticut, we've had a decline in some communities. I was just in New Canaan. They have had a 5 to 10% decline in real estate values. This is tied to not enough people, workers, available to buy these houses.
So we finally reached, you know, that old Air Force term, Joe, the point of no return, where you didn't turn back now on the bombing run, so you don't have enough fuel to get back, so you're going to have to parachute out or crash the plane. So you're saying we've passed that now.
That's right. The Golden Goose. Remember, we always called Fairfield County the Golden Goose, right?
Yeah.
The lack of investment in infrastructure, the Golden Goose is constipated.
and we
can't grow.
Yes, and I remember Governor Rell telling me when I used to talk to her on a regular basis, and I don't know what the numbers are, Joe, but I would think it's close. She used to tell me that in any given reporting quarter for taxes, she would say 55%, maybe a little more, a little less, 55% of all the state's tax revenues come out of Fairfield County. The other seven counties are only accounting for 45%.
Yeah, it's shifted a little bit, but still about 45% comes out of Fairfield County, where you have 25% of the population is, you know, sending 45% of the revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why this economic engine is so important to Connecticut. And when it begins to shrink or it grows so slowly, that's the structural problem the state of Connecticut is finding. We're not growing fast enough to support the budgets we've built.
Yeah,
that's what they call the structural problem.
And
just let me finish on that.
Yeah, sure.
We need to grow the state's economy about 2-2.5% a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can afford the government we've built. When you grow at 1% or less, you run billion-dollar-a-year deficits. That's what's going on.
Well, didn't Ben Barnes
have a growth strategy?
Didn't Ben Barnes say that we're, what was a phrase he used, Joe, under Dan Malloy, that we're in a constant crisis or something like that? Remember he said that?
Well, he used the term structural deficit, and no one quite knew what it meant.
Yeah.
And what it means is your economy isn't growing fast enough, as it did in the past, to support the cost of government. And it's that simple. We used to grow the state's economy minimum 2.5% a year, and now we're growing at less than 1%.
Mm.
And that is creating these budget deficits. And at the root of this is the lack of investment in the things that grow your economy, like transportation.
It's
in brain surgery.
Yeah, I know.
And the fighting going on in Hartford between Democrats and Republicans is really quite depressing, because we could fix this. This isn't brain surgery. You just need to fix it.
Transparency, Joe. You need the transparency, and you need to...
That was a good idea, Paul. I think that's a very good idea.
Well, you know, if I can make money off it, too, it's even better, but I don't know if I can do that or not. Joe McGee. Joe, thanks. VP of the Business Council of Fairfield County. Joe, we'll be in touch.
Okay. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. Look at that. A mover and shaker liked an idea of mine. Now, if I can just make some cash off it... Seriously, why can't we do that? All right, let's say in the end there's finally going to be an uncle on this. All right, fine. You can have 10 toll gantries. You're not going to get 80. You're not going to get 50. You're not going to get 40, 30, or 20. You're going to get 10. Let's take a look in real time at how much money is coming in there and where's the money going. All right, Gantry A brought in $500,000 last week or last 3 days. That money... is going to go for bridge repair for Metro North. If you tell people where the money's going, how much of it you actually have, you might be able to convince them. Who knows?
Crazy ideas, madness, opinions, ranting and or raving. The lines are open. 203-333-9422. Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli. WICC 600.
All right, we're 203-333-9422, 203-333-WICC. Of course, online at WICC600.com. On the radio right here at WICC600. Don't forget our podcast, each and every show with a podcast. Tony and Melissa in the morning, Lisa Wexler, 10 to noon, and yours truly, 2 to 6. You can hear all the great interviews, listen to them again, or listen to them if you missed them the first time, at our website, WICC600.com. Our webpage, check that, our Facebook page, WICC600, or wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, you know what's happening tonight, kids? Oh, yes. You know what's happening tonight? It's the beginning of pro football season.
Can't wait!
And that's right. And a lot of folks gamble, here's a shock, a lot of people gamble on pro football. Who would have thought? And as the state still continues or considers what to do about pro sports wagering, got to get a little better picture on what happens during pro football season. And joining us right now is the Senior Vice President of Communications for the American Gaming Association. And Casey Clark is with us. Casey, Paul in Bridgeport here. How are you?
I'm great, Paul. How you doing?
Well, I'm sure you and a lot of folks at the American Gaming Association have a big smile on your face because for millions of Americans, time begins again tonight, right?
Look, I've got a big smile on my face because I'm excited for the Bears to revenge their terrible
here we go.
The Packers on day one. But last year, but I know. Look, it's a great opportunity for millions of Americans to bet legally on sports for a change. You know, it's been a pretty quick turnaround in this country since the federal prohibition was overturned in 18, and now we've got 19 states or 19 jurisdictions mm-hmm. with legal sports betting. So a lot of opportunity and a lot of people taking advantage of it.
Now, yeah, 1 million more Americans, it says here in the info you placed, will place legal bets this season. But, you know, Casey, we're in the middle of this big cha-cha here in Connecticut about, well, what to do about legal sports betting. You've probably been following it with, you know, our Indian tribes and everything and who's going to run the thing, the Indians or the lottery. You know, I think this is eventually going to happen. But, boy, I tell you, you say, what, 40 million Americans, right? That's, what, one out of about every eight people are going to bet on pro football this year.
It's an exceptional number. I mean, I think what's interesting to remember is that Americans love betting on sports, and they've been doing it for a long time. The difference is that there's now an opportunity for them to do it legally. So states like Connecticut are considering it. You know, your neighboring states of Rhode Island, New York are offering it. So there's a lot of opportunity for people to really be considering transferring their betting behavior into the legal regulated market where there's a lot of protections for it.
13 states now offer legal regulated sports betting. Connecticut does not. We're still trying to figure out how to get this done. As usual here in Connecticut, the confusion state, the state of confusion,
We're not really on the cutting edge of this, but a gentleman that says we should be is Casey Clark, Senior VP Communications of the American Gaming Association. Casey, some of the numbers you sent out here are interesting. The NFL, above all other leagues, hockey, basketball, baseball, even soccer, things like that, NCAA, it remains the king for sports gamblers, doesn't it?
Yeah, all football does, really. I mean, football has just driven a lot of activity in this space for a long time. If you look back at the Nevada market, which has had legal sports betting for a long time, it's always driven the most level of engagement.
Why do you think that is, of all the sports? Why do you think that is?
I wish I knew, other than I think that, you know, there's a lot of excitement that builds up over the summer for football to start again, so maybe that's it, or maybe there's just a lot of people who are interested in finding new ways to engage in that content, and you know, that's good news for the NFL and good news for Americans who want to bet on sports.
I think you're right when it comes to the buildup. I mean, let's face it, baseball plays every day. Hockey and basketball essentially play 3 to 4 times a week. But, you know, once the lights go out Monday night or Sunday night, in starts the buildup again, Casey, for the coming week's games. It's almost like you're waiting for those two battalions to meet on the battlefield somewhere.
That's certainly true in my house, so I would guess it is for a lot of other folks, too.
Boy, I tell you, that Chicago Bears thing is going to be big for you tonight, huh?
Oh, man.
Are you an Illinois guy? Are you a native?
I am not a native. I'm a Dayton, Ohio native, but I've been a Bears fan my whole life, and I'm hoping for a avenging that horrible loss to the Packers.
Wait a minute, an Ohio guy, and you're not on the big. I was going to say Johnny Manziel. You're not on the big Cleveland Brown bandwagon this year.
No, Southern Ohio. So if anything, I'd be a Bengals fan. But I grew up with family from Chicago, and just kind of adopted the family team.
Okay, all right. All right, there you go. As my producer said, as long as you're not a Patriots fan, that's good. That's good.
Well, you know, the majority of Americans
are not.
The Patriots are going to win. They got 23% of the Americans think they're going to win the Super Bowl again this year.
You also hooked up with Morning Consult for a poll here regarding, as we go into the season, what did America say besides being resigned to the Patriots winning again?
Regrettably, the Patriots are. America thinks the Patriots are going to win again. Look, I think what you're seeing is that in a lot of places, not only do people have an interest in betting, but a real interest in betting if they had the legal option to do so. Connecticut's a great example. There was, 15% of people in Connecticut, adults in Connecticut, say they'll bet on the NFL this year, and that number goes up significantly into the 20s if you give them the legal option to do it in Connecticut. And I think the other thing that was particularly interesting about this research is the amount of people who will say they'll get increasing levels of engagement in the content for the NFL should they be able to bet. 75% of NFL bettors say they're more likely to watch a game, and 28% of them say they're more likely to go. So there's a huge opportunity here for people to really get more invested into their favorite sports, not just football, but certainly, you got playoff baseball coming up soon, and hockey getting started again. So there's a lot to look forward to, and a lot of opportunity for a lot of people.
And especially with football, you had, and they ended up being a house of cards, which was too bad because the play was getting better. But you had that Alliance of American Football that was alive for about a month and a half, and they staked a lot of their existence, Casey, on the ability to do in-game gambling. I remember when Charlie Ebersole made that presentation there. I said, "Well, that's going to be interesting." I wonder ahead now if the XFL is going to do any of this.
Look, I think that certainly was part of the business plan, right? Failed or not, of spring football before. Mm-hmm. Whether or not the XFL is thinking about it or not, I'd be surprised if they weren't, because I think that all sports leagues and teams and owners and others are all looking at ways to monetize this new opportunity. So it'd be surprising if there'd be something new comes to the market that isn't making those kind of considerations.
What do you think? I mean, let's suppose Connecticut eventually gets legal sports gambling. And as I said beforehand, I know enough legislators who think it's going to happen. It's just, who's going to run it, the Indians or the lottery or whatever. What do you think the potential is here, Casey, for a state like Connecticut and nationally? What are your dollar projections, for example, nationally?
This is a terrible answer for a live radio interview, but I'll tell you that it really depends.
Yeah.
Every state has different regulatory structures, different tax rates, and they're rolling out at different times with different access, right? So some have mobile wagering, some have only brick and mortar, some have no brick and mortar and only mobile. And so it's hard to really give an apples to apples comparison. But I'll tell you, if you look pretty, if you look at how quickly this has evolved from one market in Nevada from May of 2018 to 19 legal jurisdictions in this country 15 months later, it's been pretty rapid. And states have already seen up to $80 million in tax revenue that's come from just from sports betting. So it's an additional amenity for the gaming business. It's a low margin business, candidly, for gaming operators, but a good opportunity to get more people engaged in the protections of the legal market that they just simply didn't have before.
And I had a gentleman on from a casino website a couple of weeks ago. He was their sports, their sports betting expert, and he said something, Casey, that I thought was interesting. He said that because a lot of people, his organization too, was watching Connecticut, and they said the thing that states like ours have to watch is you have to do it right at the beginning. You've got to get the proper operator, whether it's a William Hill or a major company like that, or some of these offshore companies, obviously, you folks deal with, who know how to do this.
Well, look, we represent the licensed regulated operators in the U.S., and I think that's certainly where everyone should be focused. You know, our goal in this entire effort has been to drive the illegal market out of business that has no protections for consumers or the integrity of the game or the bets that are being placed on them. You know, if you look at responsible gaming activities that happen in the legal regulated market and the hundreds of millions of dollars we're spending to ensure that anyone who might have an issue with problem gambling has access to the resources they need, none of that exists in the black market. And
sure.
So I'm glad to hear that message is resonating with your other guests.
But,
the important thing here is that we're really giving people access to the protections of the safe legal market and cutting a real hole in the margins of the illegal operators.
Casey Clark, Senior VP of Strategic Communications, American Gaming Association. He'll be watching Da Bears tonight, so I'll give you a go, Bears, but I'll be watching with an amazing degree of neutrality. But just for you, I'll say go, Bears. So
thanks, Paul. Appreciate it very much.
Casey, appreciate it, man. Have a good time tonight.
All right, take care.
Be good. Bye-bye. All right, there you go. There you be. Casey Clark, Director of Strategic Communications, American Gaming Association. Folks, I'm telling you, as soon as we get our together in this state, it'll be some extra money. I have an idea. You want to pay for road repairs, right? Like we just talked with Joe McGee a couple of minutes ago from the Business County of Fairfield, Business Council, rather, of Fairfield County. I have an idea. Why don't we set up sports gambling and then all the sports gambling revenue that the state can make, that automatically goes to roads, right? So every time I would bet on the Jets to win and they lose and I don't win anything, I will at least, and maybe Aaron would too if he bet like I did and lost, we could at least, my friend, fill a few potholes on 95. Like if I bet $100 on the Jets and lost, would $100 fill a pothole? Probably. I would think. You would think, man, the way I bet and lose, man, I'd be responsible for 2-3 miles on 95 every year. How great would that be?